The inquisitive man, the man in want of material necessities, knowledge of Brahman, knowledge of Paramatma, liberation from birth, death and diseases, and worship of the Supreme Lord. However, he who is actually elevated in Krishna consciousness does not care for the different processes. He simply directly engages himself in activities of Krishna consciousness and thereby effectually attains his constitutional position as an eternal servitor of Lord Krishna. In such a situation, he takes pleasure in hearing and glorifying the Supreme Lord in pure devotional service. He is convinced that by his doing so, all his objectives will be fulfilled. This determined faith is called Dhritavrata, and it is the beginning of Bhakti Yoga, or transcendental loving service. That is the verdict of all scriptures. This seventh chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is the substance of that conviction. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purport to the seventh chapter of Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of knowledge of the Absolute. I'll read again the verse, 7:30, and the translation.
Sari bhutari dhaivang mang sari yakyam cha yeviru bhayana kale pichamang tevidhu yukta chetasa.
Those in full consciousness of me who now meet the Supreme Lord to be the governing principle of the material manifestation of the demigods and of all methods of sacrifice can understand and know me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even at the time of death. So, to give some structure to this class, of course we don't have too much time, 25 minutes. First of all, I want to speak a little bit about the location of this verse, because it is a kind of bridge to the main theme of the 8th chapter. It's kind of a prelude. Therefore, it's good to recap, because the 7th chapter also is the beginning of the middle 6 chapters, which essentially deal with Krishna, the relationship of the living entity with Krishna and the jiva also. Then, I want to continue to an analysis of the verse and purport of today's evening, and then communicate some basic principles, which today's topic will be Tivrina Bhakti Yogina, or developing deeper roots in Krishna consciousness. Okay. So first of all, I took something from a study guide that is in the Veda base, chapter by chapter summaries. And there it is described that the first 6 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita deal mainly with the distinction of the jiva, the spirit soul, and material nature or matter. It was described that the material soul, material nature, is temporary, and the spiritual soul is eternal, and that the spiritual soul actually, when he considers himself to be material, he comes under the influence of the modes of material nature. And in order to free himself, there's different steps, so to say, different yogas, different paths to elevate the jiva's consciousness to self-realization. And that have been described in different chapters, Sankhya Yoga, Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, and Ashtanga Yoga. So, but then, ultimately, that system culminates, all these yogas culminate in Bhakti Yoga. That's the last verse of the 6th chapter. Yoginam api sarvesham. Of all the yogis, the Bhakti Yogi is the best. So then, the middle section of the Bhagavad Gita, chapters 7 to 12, they are mainly concerned with Krishna. Who is Krishna? What is the relationship of the jiva to Krishna? And practical, the application in Bhakti Yoga. So now chapter 7 mainly dealt with the knowledge of Krishna, the process of attaining that knowledge. Krishna gave so many examples of how one can realize him in the material world even. And Now, in this today's evening verse, Krishna describes the gain of such a knowledge. What is the end of such a knowledge? And this is particularly interesting to Arjuna because he is on the battlefield, he's about to fight, and you know, he can die at any moment. So therefore Krishna explains now in this verse that by acting in Krishna consciousness, one can even at the time of death be connected with Krishna. One doesn't need to fear anything, one doesn't lose anything, basically. Exactly the opposite, one rather wins everything, one's spiritual nature. Okay, chapter 8, as I already briefly said, mainly deals with Arjuna's last question that will be explained in the next couple of days. Because he's putting forward a few questions in the beginning of the 8th chapter. He asks, okay, so what is Brahman, what is karma, what is the material manifestation, etc. And ultimately he relates to today's verse and he asks Krishna, okay, how can one who's engaged in devotional service know you, Krishna, at the time of death? So this is actually what Krishna says today. Okay, so there are different things. First of all, one point that came up during my analysis of this text. There's this book from His Grace Bhurijan Prabhu, As They Surrender Unto Me. And there he says that by naming himself, as he's speaking from Krishna now, as the governing principle behind the material manifestation, the demigods and all methods of sacrifice, basically Krishna addresses or directs the knowledge, desires and service of many classes of people towards him. And for me, this also was very interesting point, because usually, as we heard today in the morning Srimad Bhagavatam class, the living entity, because it is of the same nature as Krishna, Anandamaya Vyasat, is eternally blissful. Even in material covered consciousness, in conditioned life, material life, looks for this happiness. And so there are different people described. Today's verse is those in full consciousness of me, who know me, the Supreme Lord, to be the governing principle of the material manifestation. So usually people that are concerned with material manifestation is either Sankhya yogis or scientists, which are also kind of going in that direction. So Krishna explains here that even for these people who are engaged in this analytical study of matter and everything, and of spirit also, for them also Krishna is the supreme governing principle, the supreme Lord. Then for the demigods, demigod worshippers, generally known as the Karmakandis, they are interested in elevation to the heavenly planets. So what Krishna here also says, that this is another interest, a group with a different interest. And basically they also are under Krishna's supervision. And then ultimately he mentions the yogis and jnanis, or people who are engaged with different methods of sacrifice. And he says that for all these people, basically he is the ultimate shelter. Everybody is looking for pleasure, but everybody can find that pleasure ultimately only in Krishna. So therefore there's this different yoga paths explained, and yoga means connection. You can also perform karma, means fruitive activity, without remembering Krishna, but then it's binding. And if you act in karma yoga, as is explained in Bhagavad Gita in the 3rd chapter, for example, or also in the 5th chapter, or in jnana yoga, as is described in the 4th chapter, or in Ashtanga Yoga, Dhyana Yoga, which is described in the 6th chapter, a little bit from Sri Krishna, then By connecting these things with Krishna, one gradually becomes uplifted. Okay, so now today's purport has many, many different points. But for me, the main focus of this class is the Srila Prabhupada. He says in the purport that this seventh chapter particularly explains how one can become a fully Krishna conscious person. And I was thinking, this is maybe something that's relevant for all of us, how to become more deep or develop more deep roots in Krishna consciousness. Because Krishna says in this verse, directly in the beginning, that the one who is fully conscious of him, he gains that goal, right? He will go back to Krishna, he will gain Krishna Prema. So how can we somehow or other cultivate that full consciousness, or this tivrena bhakti yogena, this intense eagerness, desire and burning in the devotional service? Welcome, thank you for coming and giving us your holy association. So there's different things that Krishna mentions, or Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport, and they can be also categorized in Sambandha, Abhideya and Prayojana, if you have a look on that. First of all, Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport that the root cause of one's suffering is when the jiva forgets Krishna. Then he becomes covered by the modes and entangles himself in devotional service. So this is why we are all here, basically. This is at one point or another, we decided, oh, forget Krishna, we turned away from him, turned our back towards him, and wanted to enjoy independently. So that's our root problem. And I categorize that as Sambandha, because it's very important to have that knowledge and understanding, and also to have the knowledge and understanding about who Krishna actually is. What is his position? What are his different energies? And everything that has been in the beginning of the seventh chapter has been explained. So then, also, Abhideya. There's three points that I found in the purport that Srila Prabhupada considers very essential, and that are actually very essential. One of them is to develop knowledge, but this kind of develops also by being engaged in devotional service. It goes hand in hand, because actually this knowledge of one's constitutional position, Krishna, one's relationship, and also about the interaction between the jiva and material nature and time, is the realized knowledge which comes by practically applying the philosophy and culture. So it's not just dry jnana or something, but still we need some kind of instruction manual to know, okay, in which direction to go, which things to avoid, which things to do, right? You know, so many things. Okay, some things are favorable for the practice of devotional service. Let's say, okay, reading Shastra, chanting the holy names, associating with the devotees, visiting or living in a holy place, or taking prasadam, so many things. What is unfavorable, for example, in the execution of devotional service is over-endeavoring, or let's say also the mode of ignorance, if one is lazy, or has too much sleep, overeats. There's different things, if one collects too many things, that are described also by Srila Rupa Goswami in the Nectar of Instruction. Many different things. Yeah, the bhaktas, they're now particularly good, because now they get first-class training in some bhakti classes. Okay, so this is some favorable principles. Then, transcendental association. This is another thing that Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport. And he speaks of that in, first of all, association through devotional service, means directly by absorbing one's mind in Krishna and doing something practically, basically one already has the association of Krishna. Because at least theoretically we know, we heard from the Shastras that Krishna, his abode, his paraphernalia, his name, his form, his qualities, pastimes, everything is of the same quality. It's not that it's different. right? But how much do we realize that? How much are we really aware and conscious when we are doing, executing practical devotional service? So this is one thing that I find very important to consider in one's daily life. Then another thing is the intention. Okay, what do I want to get out of it? Previously in the 7th chapter, I think 24, 25 or something like that, there have been mentioned the pious living beings that come to devotional service and also the impious living beings. And among the pious living beings, there were three kinds of sakkama interested groups, you could say. The one who seeks relief from suffering, the person also who wants to gain wealth or who is inquisitive. And there's one person considered to be a nishkam karma yogi, that is the person who is searching after wisdom, after real knowledge, because he has no motive, he just wants to know, okay, what's the goal? The others, they may be frustrated in their processes. So there's also there's also a story that I want to narrate a little bit in that relation, how we can develop deep roots in Krishna consciousness. There was a yogi, and he was living somewhere close to the desert. It was not completely desert, so some trees and some bushes and everything were there, but very, very dry. And anyway, so he was living there, and some palm trees or something were also there, and he was surrounded by them. And that yogi, in his practice, somehow or other, he put one stone on top of one palm tree. Basically, they were still small when he was there in the beginning. And then, gradually, after so many years, and he was continuing his practices there, and always put some stone on top of this one palm tree, for some reason or another. And so the tree grew, but not so much as the other trees. Yeah, the other trees, of course, because they didn't have that pressure from up, they could grow much, you know, much much quicker, and you know, had much more strength to grow upwards. But then, after some time, that yogi left the place. And also a sandstorm came, and when he went through this place, all the trees except the one on whose top the stones were became uprooted. So later, that yogi came back, and then he saw, you know, that oh, there's only this one particular tree that didn't grow so much, you know, due to the stones on top, but all the others, they were fallen down. And this is, I think, a very interesting thing for us to understand. That even though we may have so many, let's say, challenges, and, you know, we take the burden of intensely practicing bhakti yoga, which means we face more our anattas, and, you know, so many things come up, right? Because By watering the root of devotional service, by hearing and chanting, also, as we heard, the other weeds are growing up, right? So the more we put water on the plants, the more they will grow. But still, it's good, because this one tree with the stones on the top, that could not really grow so high and everything, but somehow or other, he developed such deep roots and such, you know, not only spread roots, like, you know, flat, but really deep, because he had to, you know, endeavor against all the stones and everything with full force, so that finally when the sandstorm came, this tree had enough energy, enough, I don't know, capacity to anyway keep on standing, because it had these deep roots, you know, was deeply rooted. So in our Krishna consciousness is also something similar, that is very important to develop this intense desire or intensity of devotional life. Srila Prabhupada says that and this human form of life is an opportunity that needs to be fully utilized to attain the causeless mercy of the Supreme Lord. So if you go about and practice devotional service just a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit whimsically, and not too intense in order to avoid unnecessary pains which come with the process of anatta nivritti and everything, you know, at least for the time being, and then we risk to be one of the palm trees that got uprooted when the sandstorm came. Because at one point, sooner or later, this sandstorm, let's compare it now to the death, because it's very practical here in the verse, it's also today relating to the death, then this is the final examination, the final test, so then we can pass the test. Otherwise we risk that we will need to come back again and again. And we don't know where we will go next. Even Lord Krishna explains to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita that upon Arjuna's doubts, okay, what will happen with the unsuccessful yogi? Krishna explains to him that one moment, please. I'm just here. Aha, 6:40. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "Son of Prita, a transcendentalist engaged in auspicious activities, does not meet with destruction either in this world or in the spiritual world. So one who does good, my friend, is never overcome by evil." That's very practical, isn't it? I mean, if we do something, even in this little bit, at least we'll gain some human form of life, let's say, or we might even go to the heavenly planets. But of course, it's very risky. We should not exactly desire to go to the heavenly planets, because when we would go there, who knows how long we would be there? Maybe the 10,000 years of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes now are then already finished, and then we end up being in the middle of Kali Yuga, and really degrading Kali Yuga. So I don't know. I wouldn't want to risk it. I don't know. You know, let's say even we get a good body, you know, human form of body, and you know, what's the use, you know, and can just spoil his energy. So therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam is a nice verse, which mentions this Tivrena Bhakti Yogina, Etavane Valokesmin Pungsam Nishriya Sudaya, Tivrena Bhakti Yogina Manu Maya Pitamstiram. Therefore, persons whose minds are fixed on the Lord engage in the intense practice of devotional service. That is the only means for attainment of the final perfection of life. Okay, then, one last thing that very much inspired me. When His Holiness Satchinanda Maharaj was here and he gave this japa retreat the last time, and I think in April or something, it's already a couple of months ago again. In this japa retreat, he mentioned something, and that is like a general principle. We have different levels of consciousness, right? We have consciousness, unconsciousness, subconsciousness. And then Maharaj mentioned that the things which are there in our unconsciousness or subconsciousness, they also tend to come up. Like if you have water with bubbles, and the bubbles, they also come up. They pop up, so to say. So this tendency or this principle can be used if we fill our sub and unconsciousness and our consciousness, everything, with the input, Krishna input, so to say. Then these things that pop up, they will naturally remind us on Krishna. So therefore the devotee needs to develop the art of absorbing himself in Krishna consciousness. You know, can put nice pictures everywhere from Krishna, and also while chanting, you know, look at a picture or look at a Maha Mantra or something, you know. You always need to find some means to develop more strength and more depth in devotional service. And I just want to share that it's so nice to do this, because then after some time this natural taste for Krishna awakens, and one does not need to push himself anymore, because then Krishna takes over and attracts one. Okay, are there questions or criticism or additions? Please feel free to speak. Over-endeavoring. Sometimes we want to have something. Let's say, I had some experience that I, the last Christmas vacations, I went to Germany to do a little bit Sankirtan and everything, you know, prasadam distribution, because I've been living in a temple in Munich before for quite some time. So, and I wanted to earn some Lakshmi for the college and for different things. So then I came there, and it was really not possible for me to do it, you know, it was too cold, and still I produced the sweets and I, you know, went out, but it didn't work, you know, I don't know if this is maybe, anyway, but you know, to over-endeavor means to do something and with the aim of achieving something, but maybe this goal is not in our credits. Maybe we don't have enough pious credits or something, you know, to get that. But we are still thinking, no, I need to do it, you know. I am the doer and I need to do it, you know. And it's not recommended because it can be so entangling. Therefore, Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada explains that one should be satisfied with whatever one gets. And it's also there in the Sri Isupanishad, the Ishavasya principle, that we should just accept whatever we get. You know, whatever comes to us without over-endeavoring. And instead we should dovetail our time and utilize it in Krishna's service. Is this okay? A little bit? No? Yeah. Sorry, sometimes a little bit unclear for me. Another question? Comment? Okay, then we end on time. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Granta Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Go back to Vrinda ki jai.